my favourite times of the week to delve into the history of this weird and wacky city of ours. And for Dictionary of Sydney, we have a special guest in with us this week. Katie Gilchrist is a fellow at the State Library and she joins us in the studio now. Morning, Katie.
Hi, Tess. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on in. So what are we talking about this week?
This week we're talking about a horrible murder, I'm afraid.
Oh, good.
Yes, I thought you might like that.
Right up my alley. Does it go by any particular name? Is it a really famous one?
Well, it should be, but it's not. And that's why I think this story is really quite important.
Okay.
It was in 1866 and it was a murder inquiry of... That shocked the city. In September 1866, an 11-year-old boy took his dog out for a walk down on Sussex Street, and it was a wasteland and down by Sussex Street in the 1860s, and his dog started to bark, and the dog had discovered the severed head of a dark-haired woman.
Ooh.
And her tongue was protruding outwards. Now, naturally, as an 11-year-old boy, he was terrified and he ran home to his father, who immediately went and got the police from George Street. And the police went down to the scene and discovered the head. And they later discovered the armless torso of a body.
Ew.
Limbless, just partially burned, decomposing, rotting. But nothing else.
Oh, great. So I'm assuming we have rotting. It had been there for a little while.
It had been there for about 2 to 3 weeks.
Ugh.
Yes. And probably been nibbled at by rats and goats and
oh, good.
All sorts of wild animals. Mm. So they we have a head and we have a torso. And they're put into akin to a body bag.
Okay.
And they're sent to the dead house at the Benevolent Asylum on the corner of Pitt and Devonshire Streets.
The Dead House. That's an amazing name.
Yes. And the medical officer there, Dr. Arthur Renwick, examines them and says, well, somebody has expertly severed the head from the body.
Expert. Ooh.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes, somebody with skills with a very sharp knife.
Okay.
So there's an inquest because when there is any strange, sudden or suspicious deaths in the 19th century, an inquest is held to ascertain the cause of death. Now, obviously, it seems quite obvious, the cause of death. And the poor gentleman of the jury had to view the head and the torso and decide that, yes, a murder had been committed by a person unknown.
So they didn't look at pictures, they brought them in.
Oh, no. For an inquest to be legally valid, the physical body had to be viewed.
This is a nightmare.
It would have been a nightmare. Can you imagine the smell?
I don't think I want to.
No. I mean, even when washed up legs or arms from drowned people were washed up on beaches around Sydney, which happened quite a lot, The inquest would be held around the leg or the arm.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes,
I'm
know.
Glad that's a custom that died out.
Well, thank goodness, yes.
Yeah, that's not nice.
No, it wouldn't have been a pleasant task. And they weren't paid either.
Oh, so, even better.
I know.
Oh.
So anyway, so the colonial, the police, so that was the end of the inquest. The remains were buried. And the colonial government offered a £50 reward for any further information.
Oh, cha-ching.
Well, that was a lot of money in 1866.
This is true.
But anyway, weeks passed, no more clues. Sydneysiders were absolutely, oh my goodness, is there a serial killer on the loose? I mean, this is awful. It was one of the worst crimes that had been committed in the city. And 3 weeks later, a young shoemaker by the name of David Fitzpatrick went to the police with a remarkable story that 3 or 4 weeks previously, one night, late at night, in the Sussex Street region, a man had approached him carrying a very heavy iron box.
Oh.
And he asked him if he would help him move it down by the water.
Okay.
Now, David Fitzpatrick was none the wiser, and he said, yeah, sure, mate, I'll give you a hand moving this. And at the time, he thought, this is a bit strange. And it stank. The contents really stank. And so David asked him, the man who we didn't know, well, what's in the contents of this box? And the man said, oh, it's just a load of old rotting meat that I'm going to throw into the harbour and get rid of. Oh. So this young shoemaker went home thinking, well, that was a bit odd. But anyway, he eventually went to the police. This is late October by this time, and told them that of his weird story. So the police immediately went to they'd left the box at the Walter Scott Inn on Sussex and Bathurst Streets. And the strange man had told him that he was going to get rid of it later. So the police immediately went to the Walter Scott Inn. And in the outside dunny at the back of the Walter Scott Inn, they discovered 20 pieces of human remains.
Oh.
Which can't be nice after, probably about a month had passed by this time now.
And it's in the toilet.
It's in the loo.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's double whammy.
Yeah, not nice.
Not good.
No. So they fish all these pieces of human gore and flesh out and take them again to the dead house. And the poor doctor at Renwick again has to piece them together like a macabre jigsaw puzzle. At the same time, the head and torso are exhumed from Devonshire Street Cemetery so that the actual whole body can be put back together to see if the head, the torso and the rest of the body all fit together.
I would quit my job. That would be where I quit.
It was probably one of the worst things that Dr. Renwick, who had a very long and successful career, I might add, and was a very prominent colonist. It was probably one of his worst jobs ever.
Yep.
But he deduced from this that it was the pieces all belonged to the same body. It was a woman. She had dark hair. She had a very distinctive nose. She had a mole on her right arm. And so basically these, and he could ascertain how tall she had stood when she had stood once. So all these clues, people started to come and go, oh, we've not seen a certain woman for a few weeks. I wonder if it could be her.
Okay.
So people started eventually to come forward. And eventually it was revealed that the woman was called Annie Scott. Now, she had been a big woman. She'd been 5'7" or so, which was quite high for, the 19th century. She had one of her neighbours identified the moles on her right arm. I mean, this was the day before DNA analysis and blood and hair and teeth even analysis. So the marks on people's bodies was very much one way of how, was the only way of identifying people who were dead and were, unknown. So it led the police to think, well, hang on, is there a man involved in all of this? And they arrested her husband, who was called William Scott.
Was there any evidence against him, or they just assumed?
Well, they went to his lodgings, and there they found trousseaus full of clothing and jewellery and bonnets.
Right.
But their neighbours and friends eventually said, yes, they had belonged to Annie Scott. Now Annie Scott has disappeared. And so, again, like the marks on her body, her possessions eventually identified her. She always wore a string of red beads around her neck.
Okay.
Now, he hadn't got rid of anything.
Smart.
He'd even taken some of her possessions to a pawn shop on Castlereagh Street. Rather than burn them and get rid of them, he'd taken them and pawned some of her possessions so that when the police discovered the pawnbroker's ticket in one of his pockets, it took them to the pawnbroker's shop on Castlereagh Street and bingo, there's all her possessions.
That's suspicious.
So they arrest him and they charge him. And his trial went to court in February 1867. Now, he had a very famous lawyer, William B. Daly, defended him and said, well, nobody saw him cut her body up. Nobody, nobody could place him at the time of her death. Nobody had seen him dump the body on the head rather on down on Sussex Street. It was all circumstantial.
It must have been a lot easier to be a defence lawyer before DNA.
Absolutely.
Or before even teeth were identifying.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Just no one saw him.
And now he defended him for a good... He stood up in court and I think he spoke for a good 3 hours just talking about every... pulling apart every shred of possible evidence against this man, William Scott. But William Scott was, in fact, a butcher.
Oh, the skilled knife.
The skills of dissection that had been first identified when the head had been found came out, which was pretty damning evidence. But also in court, it was revealed that William Scott also had another wife.
So scandal.
The butcher was also a bigamist.
Oh, there you go.
So there you go. That's a good motive for murder. Now, bigamy was actually quite common in the 1860s and 1870s because people split up and forgot to, you know, and remarried and you know, it was actually quite common. So this was his motive for murder. And so the jury at the criminal trial, obviously, they found him guilty. Nobody campaigned for a reprieve, and he was executed at Darlinghurst Jail on St. Patrick's Day in March 1867.
It's very, very gruesome. Where can we find out more info?
Well, you can go to thedictionaryofsydney.org.au to find out more.
Thanks so much, Katie.
Thanks for having me.
That is Katie Gilchrist. She's a fellow at the State Library, running you through Dictionary of Sydney for the week.